try to do in the next hour for the principal is try to figure out how to build a mikvah in 10 easy steps. So it sounds like it should be pretty, pretty simple. What could possibly go into building a mikvah? The Torah describes that it's very simple. Achmayin of Bohem can remind me of dogs. The Torah gives us two different options about how to be toivel. Either you can be toivel in a mayon. A mayon, you don't need any easy steps. The Rosh Hashanah built it for you already. It's already an underground spring. You find a spring of water inside a cave somewhere called the Ariz and Mikvah and Tzvah. You just toivel and finish. That's easy. Then the Torah says another option is Bohem Mikvah Mayon. If you can't find yourself a mayon, so no problem. You do a hole in the ground, wait for it to rain a little bit, fills up with water, and shoot, and you can be toivel in it, and that's Gevaldik. So those are the two different models that the Torah creates for us. So we're going to spend the entire time today talking about the second model. The first model, again, is fairly simple to do, but not all that practical most of the time. But the second model is the one that's traditionally been used most of the time to enable a person to be toivel, both if he was Nida, if he was Caleb, if he was Geir, whenever the Lachal requires to be love. And we're going to try to focus all around these phrases of this phrase of Bohem Mikvah Mayim. What exactly does that mean? So the Gemara tells us that we have a tradition that a mikvah, a collection of water, of rainwater, has to have a certain amount to it. So it has to have the amount of water that Kol Guf Kishuladim Oyel Behem. It has to be the amount of water that an average-sized person can't fit their body in at one shot. When you're toivel in the mikvah, you have to do it all at once. You can't put your hands in and your foot in it. That has to be one, two, vasachas. So the Gemara says, how much of that were bound to the Maisa? The Gemara says, Shira Chachamim, 40 saw. So Chazal made the calculation. They took a survey of average-sized people, threw them into a pit, tried to measure how much water displacement, a little bit of, what's his name? What's the guy's name? Archimedes, a little bit of water displacement, came to the realization that 40 saw is the Shira, and that's the good. That's the Kachem Halacha, that's the Shira, and you need 40 saw of rainwater. Any water whatsoever comes from the sky, so it's automatically okay. So there are two basic halachas, or a few more, but two basic halachas that govern this body of rainwater, this Bohem Mikvah Mayim, and that's going to take up most of our discussion today. One is what's called the Psul of Shuvin, and the other is called the Psul of Zeichon. What in the world do these terms mean? So the term Shuvim, Shauf, something that was in a kli. Any water that was at any time collected in a kli becomes potentially problematic. How do you know this is true? So the Torah's Koran dashes this from Sukkim. The Torah says, Achmayin aboy mikvah mayim. The Torah speaks in the same breath about a mikvah and a mayon. So mamayin b'day shemayim, a mikvah b'day shemayim. Just as a mayon is something that happened naturally, so too a mikvah collection of rainwater has to happen naturally. If you go ahead and you collect the water in some kind of a kli somewhere and you bring it over to the mikvah, that's a problem. That's called a lack of dumya de mayon, and that would be disqualified. Just how serious are the disqualifications? That's just how bad is that psul? So that's a big machlekes rishonim. Some rishonim will maintain that that's a real psul d'oraisa. The mayim shuvin is a real drush, the Torah's Koran meant seriously. But if you have any water that's in the mikvah, if the water was collected through kelim, it's possible d'oraisa. And the other Mishnah will say, no, that's only possible with the Rabbanan. If it's only possible with the Rabbanan, why did Chazal make this gzeira in the first place? That's a different question. So Tais just tries to answer that question. Why Chazal would have made such a gzeira if it's only with the Rabbanan? But according to many, many opinions, it's with the Raisa. Even Al Atzad, that Mayim Shuvin is a problem on a level of the Raisa, how much Uvin? Let's say I basically have 39.9999% of a Kashan Mikvah, a little bit of Mayim Shuvin in there. How much Mayim Shuvin is going to ruin the Mikvah? So here, even within the Machmirim tell us that only Rova Mikveh Shol. If you have 20.001 of water is Mayim Shuvin, then you rest, it's regular Megishamim, regular rainwater that came directly from the heaven, that would be a problem with Deraisa. But if Rova the Mikvah is Mayim Sheirim, it's regular Megishamim, so then Niyot would not pose a problem with Deraisa. It doesn't mean that it's okay. Halacha lemaisa, what's the shear? How much rainwater can rule? How much Mayim Shuvin can rule a mikvah? The amount is very, very small. Gimel Lugin is not all that much. A Revias, when we speak about a Kiddush cup in Revias, that's a Revias Halug. Let's say the Revias Halug is about 3 ounces or so. So a Lug is all 12 ounces. So you're talking about 36 ounces. That's not so much. How much is in this cup? What's in this Dasani bottle of water? Remember the one? 16.9 fluid ounces. So basically, you have two of these, two of these things. So you're gonna disqualify the mikvah midrabanan. So again, everybody agrees that the psul of gimel lugan is on a midrabanan. That's the gemara. Psul of gimel lugan is on a midrabanan. The machlekes of rishonim is what if it's more than gimel lugan? What if it's rova mikvah? So some of the rishonim say that is in fact the psul of deraisa. None of the rishonim say even that's a psul of midrabanan. How do we pass in the lacha the ramos machriya lechumra the shayla? And we pass in lechumra that any time there's a chashash of rova mikvah being shalv, then we have a very, very serious shayla in our hands, and we have mamash a chashash of deraisa. If you ask for the most part, it's most rainwater, it's a little bit of shav here and there. It's less than gibbelugim, it's kosher. It's more than gibbelugim, then it's possible to be able to rub on it. So it's obvious that we're going to do anything and everything in our power to make sure that we don't have any mayim shum anywhere near amigvos, because we don't want to disqualify our victim, even if they're nice and you're able to rub on it. So how do you do that? How do you go about practically doing that? So very simple, like they did in the olden days. They dig a hole in the ground and wait for it to rain. So in the olden days, they did in the backyard, they pull out some dirt. So today, they bring in some fancy machinery, they make a big hole in the ground. It's basically the same model. And the water comes directly in, and shalom Yisrael, and you don't have a problem, I'm sure.
So again, we pass them the Ramon holds what?
Ramon's machmer that if it's a robe shawl, it's a problem with the rice. Okay? Yeah, it doesn't make that much of a difference either the rice or the rabbon. It's going to be puzzled anyway. So that sounds like a pretty simple model. So we'll try to do that. It doesn't exactly work that way.
How does that make, if the whole problem of Shulim is the rabbon, how can you say if it's Rav, Shulim is possible with the rice?
No, I said it's not quick. It's a Rishon. Some Rishon will say the whole Shulim is the rabbon.
Right.
Those Rishon say that even the whole thing is Shulim, it's kosher than a Torah.
Right.
But we're machmir that if it's a Rav Shulim, then it's possible with the rice. That's the way
we're going to those who hold it, that is the rice. According to those who hold that, is the Shulim is the rice.
And so then they would only say that it's wrong.
Right.
Right. Okay. So practically speaking, how are we going to collect this water? You're going to just make a hole in the ground, and then people are going to be toiling in the middle of the backyard. So you want to put some kind of structure in. You want to have some kind of roof here. So how in the world is the water getting in? You can make a big hole in the roof. So every time it rains, it's going to flood. So you have to have some kind of a system that you can control the water. So how do we usually control water? Through pipes. So pipes, disaster. Pipe, kavals, for sure, get a pipe. That's not so simple. Mishnah says that the only time something is considered to be a kli for the purposes of Ayim Shuvin is if it has what's called the base kibble, if it's a receptacle to it. So you can have a kli, let's say, for example, we have a flat table. So if a little bit of water fell on the flat table, that's not Ayim Shuvin. That doesn't disqualify the water. It was because the water touched the kli, that's not a problem. But here, a water bottle, this is a base kibble. Or this cup, this is a base kibble. So these are problems. This water would now be possibly on board. I couldn't use this water in the middle. But just because a little bit of water came from the sky and fell onto a table, that would not disqualify the water. So the key is it has to be called the base kibble. What's called the base kibble? So the mishnayos and the sefer zvot elaborate. And one of the qualms that emanates from those mishnayos is that if something is open on both ends, so the water never really collects there, that is not called a base kibble. And therefore, the Mishnah describes pipes. Mishnah speaks about sinor. Mishnah speaks about using sinors and water going through the sinor, going through the open pipe. And that is not considered to be collecting in the pipe, and therefore that would be okay. That's no problem. So as long as something is open on both ends, that would for sure not be a problem. Unless it's open on both ends, but within the pipe itself, there's some place that the water collects. That's what the Mishnah describes. That's the famous sugya in the seventh pack of Baba Kama. Anyone who did learn Mikvah has probably learned it there. Tzinu shechakol v'sav, shechakol v'sav kavo. So the Gemara puts a whole discussion about, what if I have a pipe? And the pipe itself is not a problem, because it's open on both ends. But now there are holes that are inside the pipe. There are cracks and crevices inside the pipe that the water is collecting in. So that may become a base kibble. So if you have enough of those cracks and crevices, enough water getting into that, so that water can potentially become mayim shuvim. So when you set up a system of collecting water for mikvah, the first thing you want to make sure is that you don't have any base kibbles whatsoever. So you're using open pipes. You're using, let's say, gutters on the roof. So you have a roof, and you want to collect the rainwater on the roof. So you don't want it collected in a kli on the roof. You want it to go in a gutter. You want the gutter to be open on both ends. So there's no base kibble to it. And then you want it to go directly down into some pipe system that's open, 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 and eventually leads into the mikvah. So anything along the way, you have to make sure doesn't have a closed container to it. You have to make sure that nothing has any kind of a base kibble along the way. So this was a major machlokes rishonim. What do we mean by that? It's something, the Gemara quotes, the Mishnah quotes, that if you have a pipe that has a little crack in it, that's a problem. So most of the Rishonim learned what that means is as follows. It means I made the crack here. I made the hole here. I want that water to collect there. I want something to collect there. Why do I want to collect there? So Tosfos has a whole discussion about what you possibly want. Why would you ever do such a thing? But Tosfos says if you have a base kibble that wasn't nasa with a base kibble, that's not called a base kibble. That's a nothing. That's come out of the leisa. That's what Tosfos quotes from many, many Rishonim. And the Mordechai, the Masechet Kiddushin quotes, Yesh Omu Mudusim. Those who say that any base kibble whatsoever, whether you wanted it to be a base kibble, you don't want the base kibble, if physically it's a base kibble, that poses a problem. Any water that collects there is called Mayim Shuvim. So that becomes already a whole complicated shaila. When we want to fill up a mikvah, we want to collect rainwater, So we want the water to come from the sky, from the clouds, go on to the roof. Roof is on a base kibbutz. We want it to collect into these, to go into these gutters, go from the gutters into the pipes and drain all the way down to the floor where eventually the mikvah is going to be built. So I want to make sure that there are no holes anywhere along the way. So according to Tosfos, as long as you didn't make the holes, as long as you didn't make the cracks, as you didn't make the crevices, it doesn't matter if you have a few here and there, that doesn't matter. But according to the Mordechai, that would pose a problem. Even if they were Nasim and Elehim, that in and of itself would be a problem. So when we build mikvahs, we try to be very, very careful. There's a general rule in those mikvahs that we try to make the mikvah kosher for everybody. There's a famous line from the Chazon Ish that Chazon Ish said that he never saw a posel mikvah because the posel mikvah is very, very hard to posel mikvah, right? Because when you build mikvahs, you build them with such high standards because we want everybody to be happy. You don't want somebody to come down and say, I don't like your mikvah, I don't use your mikvah. So we build mikvahs with chumbers. So the Chazon Ish said he never saw a posel mikvah. Of course, he also said that he never saw a what?
Kosher
Erev. Kosher Erev, right? So because the Erevim, so we have coolers and coolers and coolers and coolers. Because there, you have an option. Don't use the air. The mikvah, you can't build a, you can't have a community there. You have to be all that using the mikvah. So, get back to our story. So, this is a shahada that we have when we build the mikvah. So, we will try to make sure that the pipes are clean and clear of any kinds of cracks and crevices along the way. This was a big issue in the Middle Ages. The Rosh and Marik and Shaim Brain discussed about if you use wooden pipes, so then the wood tends to corrode, tends to crack over time, and then you start to get these base kibble issues. So, later in generations, so we don't use wooden pipes anymore, we use plastic pipes. So we use piping that doesn't crack so much. So for us, it's very, very little a problem, unless over time you have sometimes crack. But at least when you build the mikvah first, so hopefully everything is up to par. And anytime you want to refill the mikvah, so you have to make sure that everything is up to par, nothing's cracked, etc. So remember when we run Barabbas, so we built the mikvah in Barabbas, so the rub who we were using at the time was a Chassidish fellow. So he made me climb up on the roof with him to make sure that every gutter, my hand run along the entire gutter to make sure there were no cracks and holes and nothing. You know, thread and piping just to make sure it should be there for shashu sugar. So as I was running my hand along the way, so he kept on asking me, so do you feel anything? Hey, baby skin, not a crack, not a bit of nothing. So he stuck his hand in and he says, no, we have a problem. We have a bias kibble. I mean, okay, we have a bias kibble altogether. We have a bias kibble. Where's the bias kibble? Where's the base kibble? So he said that the screws that screw the piping in to the roof, so he said every screw has a little bit of a head to it when you put the screwdriver in. That's a very, very small base kibble. But after enough time, so a little bit of water, an ounce of water will collect in that screw, and then another screw, between all the screws and all the base kibbles all rolled together, you'll end up with give a look at my shoe apostles and they've so we have to get rid of all the bias kibbles and all the screws. So here I was hanging out for dear life, 10 feet up in the air, trying to figure out how we're going to move the bass kibbles. So he probably pulls out of his pocket, I think a silly putty, and he shoves into every single bias kibble all the way. He obviously knew that he was going to find it. That's why he walks around with silly putty to hide all the rest of his life. And that's one of the tricks of the trade when you build a mikvah, you look for bias kibbles, so carry with you a silly putty on top. Okay, good. So fine, so we've closed up all the holes, we have everything ready to roll.
It was cautious that the water was going to seep into the mikvah from the...
Well, eventually.
No, as it's flowing through.
The water's going to go into those holes, then it's going to continue
along. Those little holes are going to overflow.
Right, of course. Yeah. Okay, so again, this is all a chum rabbi alma, because the ikim, because we probably passed it, like the Rishon will say, that it wasn't made with the kabbalah people. It was kabbalah people, I didn't even make it, I didn't even know it was there. So great. So this is very, very easy. So we made it for rain. That's a problem. Tell them it rains. Bishmach. We filled in a beautiful, beautiful mikvah 40 saw. Went straight from the roof through the pipes, without the base kibbles, doing the silly putty, the whole thing onto the ground. And the first people are ready to use the mikvah tonight. Wow, 140 saw, ready, good to go. Okay, so we just finished using the mikvah tonight. Now what? So let's say we start out with 80. It's dirty, right? That's a big problem. So how are we going to clean it? We're scratching our head. We'll try another night. Okay? So 2 nights, 3 nights. And then someone's going to stop to complain and say, wait a second, we're filthy. Right? What are we going to do? So it's obvious that we have to get rid of this water. There's no other way to that. We have to clear out this water. So now what do we do? So we drain out the mikvah. We forget how to do that. We drain out the mikvah, and we're ready to start again. And then we turn on the weather forecast and they tell us it's going to be sunny for the next 2 weeks. We're in Eretz Yisrael now, so it's the after Pesach until Sukkot. It's not going to rain for 6 months. Now on. So we have to have some kind of a system to constantly replenish the mikvah, but we have to do it without compromising the halacha in terms of Mayim Shuk. So how are you going to replenish the water? You can't just turn on a faucet and just fill the mikvah with water. That's the Imam Shuman. We assume that any water that's inside the city pipes, in some shape or form, bumped into a kli. Even though the pipes themselves are not kalim, are not base kibbles, but there are different things along the way that from when the water comes from the reservoir into your bathtub, it goes through a lot of different mechanisms, and the eskamas aposkim is that's considered to be somewhere along the way there was a base kibble, multiple places along the way there was a base kibble. Remember a couple of years ago, so I was trying to figure out about one of the water towers and on top of the warm, if I'm not mistaken. So I was interested whether that had a status of a base kibble or not. So I got somebody to take me up to the top, but they told me that we have to climb the rest of the way. There was no real ladder. It wasn't a good scene. But after all my experience of climbing the top of the falls, that was too much. Came down. Okay. Anyway, but it looked like a base kibble to me. Okay. So getting back to the story. So how are we going to empty out the water and still have a mikvah? What's going on? So the Mishnah has already addressed this issue. The Mishnah has accepted the vote, and Chazal came to the realization that you have to come up with some kind of a creative idea. I don't come up, like make it up. I mean, you have to use some kind of a din, some kind of a din deraisa that's going to be mash the mikvah to enable us to clean the mikvah, empty the mikvah, and still, in a sense, keep on using the mikvah there. So one of the suggestions that's given based on a series of dinim that appear is the following. It's what we colloquially today call hashoka. Whether that's 100%, you know, whether the terminology is sometimes a little bit questionable, we're going to call it Hashoka. What Hashoka means is as follows. There is a din in Hilchos Mikvos. Let's say I have a kosher mikvah. Let's see here again. Yeah, I have a kosher mikvah. It's the rain came, right? The clouds, the rain came down through the pipes, right? Everything showed. Filled up here. I have 40 saw. Everything's good. Okay? Now, I have another bore, another hole, adjacent to that mikvah, which was filled up with, what? Absolute 100% pulse of mayim shuv. Turned on the faucet, filled it up with mayim shuv. Okay? What I simply have to do is connect the two. I make a little bit of a hole between the two, and then lo and behold, all of a sudden, the mayim shuv in water and the megashum water touch each other. One may say that they actually, what do they do to each other?
Yes.
You know, one may, I knew someone was going to say that because I wanted to mislead you to say that. So somebody may say that that's what Hashoka means from a Lashon Mishika. So in case anyone's interested, there is a Radak in Sefer Yoel, in Treasar, that tells you that's not what the word Hashoka means. Mishika HaYekovim, he tells you that the source of the word Hashoka is not from the word Mishika. So just in case you're interested in that, I did not know that, but other people did and they told me about it. So whatever you think the etymology of the Rashok is, the mice of the din is if you have a posel mikvah touching a kosher mikvah, so basically you can now be toivel in the posel mikvah. The halacha is you're allowed to be toivel in the mayim shuvin right now. Now this halacha sounds like it's very, very helpful. Why? Because now I have an option of constantly, in a sense, emptying out my mikvah. So when a person comes to be toivel, where are they going to be toivel? They're not going to be told here. This mikvah, which is the real halachic mikvah, is going to be covered up, it's going to be closed off, it's going to be underground, no one's going to get anywhere near that mikvah. What I'm going to do is every night when the woman comes to be tovel, I'm going to open up a little small hole. How big is that hole? You know what the shear is? Shofar sanod, the size of two fingers to move around. So it's a special shear, nochus mikvos, shofar sanod, not all that big. I'm going to open up this little hole, and I'm going to fill this bore up with regular sink water, mamish right out of the pipes, right out of the base kibbles, right out of the New York City plumbing. I'm going to fill this up with mayim shuvim, and we're going to open up the hole for a minute. I'm going to let the woman be tovelas in this, and I'll let 20 women be tovelas in this water. By the nighttime, the water is going to be dirty. What do I do at night? Close up the hole, drain out the mikvah, and start again the next night. Fill it up again, and kaina v'kaina. So that's a gewaltige system. It's an unbelievable system. It solves the world's problems based on this simple principle called Hashoka. So the question is, why are we still waiting for an hour and a half? We just solved the whole problem. So simply build a mikvah based on Hashoka. So there weren't many mikvahs that were built based on this principle. So this principle had some potential flaws to it. It had some potential human error factors that could take place. One of the human error factors revolves around the very, very long of the Shishayla. The rayas that all the Rishonim bring to this idea of Mayim Shuvim becoming kosher based on the Hashoka, I have one simple question. I opened the hole, and now I subsequently closed it up. I opened it up for a split second, the waters touched, the kissed, whatever they did, and now I closed the hole, and now a woman is tovelis in the Mayim Shuvim. What do you think about that? Good or no good? So that's a big machlokes in Rishonim. So probably most of Rishonim hold that's okay. The Rosh says that's okay. The Rashba says that's okay.
What's the case? I'm sorry.
Means I touched the waters for a split second, and now I closed up that hole. So b'shas tevila, the waters are not touching. The Rosh and the Rashba both say that's perfectly okay. There's nothing wrong with being tovel in this Mayim Shuvim, because once it touched Mei Mikvah, it became kosher, and it remains kosher the Olam Poet. It has now been transformed to become no longer Mayim Shuvim. That's the Rosh and the Rashba.
The hole was closed.
Even if the hole subsequently closed. And Rabbi Yerucham, one of the Talmidim of the Rosh, quotes that not everyone agrees with that. There were some Rishonim who disagreed and said no. But if you want to be tovel b'shas when the hole is open, that's fine. But if you want to be tovel when the hole is closed, that already becomes a serious problem. That's tantamount to being tovel in the mikveh that's kulo shov, which again, question where we talked about Rima, that would be absolutely a raisa. So what's the issue? What's the lumbus of this machleikah? So why is this machleikah so critical? So Chaim is a famous beer. As to what are the Rishonim arguing about? So Chaim explains that there are two fundamentally different ways of understanding this principle of Hashem. Why does this magic work? Mishnayis, Gemaras, Rishonim, Shulchanot. Why does this game work? That connect the mikvahs, hocus pocus becomes Hashem. So you can understand it one of two ways. Either you can understand it that the Mayim Shuvim lose the psul. That there is a parallel din of Tumah V'Tahara. If I have puzzled water, if I have tummy water, and I pour tummy water into a mikvah, it loses its Tumah. Generally speaking, a mikveh doesn't work for food to drink. You can't take a tummy apple put in a mikveh. Tevil of a mikveh works for people if the kelim does it, has no effect whatsoever on oichel or mashkin. Nevertheless, the Mishnah says there's a special din by water, that if I take water that's tummy and put it into a mikveh, only water, not other drinks, take water, put it into a mikveh, it loses its tumah. So comes the Rosh and says that when you take mayim shuvin and you put it into a mikveh, you touch it, you kiss it to a mikveh, so then it's not shuvin anymore. The same way that it lost its status of Tumah, it loses its psul of Shuvah, that's a din deraisa. And therefore, Chaim argues that once you are machshir the water, once you are mitar the water, once you remove the psul of the water, then the Mayim Shuvim become independently ois Shuvim, and now you can be done on them even though you subsequently close the hole. There's nothing wrong with them. That's what the Rosh and the Rash hold. Whereas when Yeruchim's Rishon would disagree, say no, says Rukhain. That magic trick to remove Tumah was said by Tumah. You can't say svar than this. That's a special din that tumah samayim could disappear through becoming connected to a mikvah. But the psul of shuvah never goes away. So what's pshat? So how can I be tovel in the mayim shuvah? Why does Mishnah seem to say it can be tovel in the mayim shuvah? Says Reb Chaim, there's another din called luchibu mikvahs. Luchibu mikvahs means called luchibu mikvah rabbi mikvah. Hold on that this body of water is mechubah halachically, and what's considered the halachic chibur? The shear of shofaras hanod. So once there's a hole that's here and open right now by Sheo Shom, B'Shas Tevilas Mechubar, so then, once I open the water, when I'm toiveled in this body of water, it's Ke'ilu I toiveled in this body of water. So it's not Pshat that the Mayim Shuvim became kosher. Mayim Shuvim is Posel, but I'm toiveled in a Posel Mikvah. But since the Posel Mikvah, B'Shas Mayim says Mechubar to kosher Mikvah, I'll be din, review it as if I toiveled in the other, even I didn't touch the other one. I'm 3 feet away from the other one, doesn't matter, I'll be din, call Mechubar Mikvah, Rekha Mikvah. Might not be a minute to find the difference in the world if you subsequently close the hole. So if you go down the route of the Rosh and the Rashba, that the Mayim Shuvim will disappear. Once it disappears, the Olam Vod. But if you hold that only kosher out called Mechub the Mikvah, so close man that's Mechub the Mikvah, it's good. If it's not Mechub the Mikvah, then it's a problem. So this is a very, very real Shah. Lachuma, have we fasted in Alocha? So the Shulchan Aruch is Mekel of this Shah. And the Shach writes in the Chaz Mikvah, so Yeshua will not. He quotes the Rabbeinu Yeruchim who quotes Yesh Olam, sometimes Rabbeinu and Machmir, but the Rash bin the Rosh and the Shomarach, the Ichmaker didn't make on the Shem. So now this becomes a challenge. If you want to build a mikveh based on Hilchas HaShokah, so you have a little bit of a challenge to do. Why? Because we really would prefer to keep this hole closed as much as we can. For very, very simple, forget about halachic concerns, very simple what? Cleanliness, right? Sanitary reasons. But we don't really want to keep this hole open any more than we actually have to. So what that means is as follows, that we'll keep the hole closed for most of the time. A few women are going to come tonight to use the mikvah. So right before the first woman comes in, we'll open up the hole and leave it open for a few hours and then close it up. What's going to happen? What's going to happen one night? They're going to forget to open up the hole. So they're going to forget to open up the hole. Oh, yeah, yeah, you forgot to open up the hole. Oh, yeah, yeah, disaster, right? Well, again, depends. Yes, according to the Rashi and the Rosh, not such a big disaster. According to Ben Yerucham, it's a psul deraisa, it had karas, and it's small, much closer to the disaster, okay? So we don't want to build a mikvah that's relying in life and in halacha. We try to cut down on human error faster because they tend to have people are frail, they tend to make mistakes. So we wouldn't want to do that. But can anybody think of something that could even be more problematic? Something that could be a real disaster, l'choladeis, if you're building a mikvah based on this? Laziness. Namely, let's say I'm filling up this water in my mishum, okay? So here's the hole. Even in the hole is open, right? I fill up the mikvah right to here. Now, it may be much more than 40 shah. It may be 100 shah. Usually our mikvahs are way, way bigger than 40 shah. So the mikvah ladies look and say, wow, Baruch Hashem, I filled up the mikvah, it's kevaldik. What does she not realize? That she didn't quite make it to the hole. What happened? So that's no good according to everybody. That mikvah's possible, according to the Ramah of Paskin, and I'm sure it's possible to write, so this mikvah's possible in a Torah l'chol hadeis. Again, l'chol hadeis within the world of the Ramah. It's possible l'chol hadeis, and according to the Ramah, it's possible l'chol hadeis with the Raisa. So that's an unbelievable human factor error. So again, so you have these kinds of almost like concerns, like we know it works, and if anyone really, really pays careful attention to what they're doing, so then we can really build a mikvah fairly simple based on this, but we have two realistic concerns that's going to keep us away from constructing a mikvah just based on this. So again, historically, the one mikvahs that were built this way, but practically today, I can't say for the whole world, in America, nobody builds a mikvah just based on this alone because of the potential things that can go wrong. We do use this model. We're not wasting our time on this model. This model is a very important model as a backup. It's an insurance policy in the mikvah. We do use it. We do build some mikvahs based on this, but this is not the only thing we do. Nobody today in America would build a mikvah just relying on Hashem alone.
Does the hole have to be high up, or why don't you just put the hole closer to the bottom of the two pits?
Okay, so...
That won't be a problem.
Okay, so the problem is it's going to be a little harder to open and close the hole because it's not accessible. So that's going to be a problem. You have to go scuba diving and come forward and close it. Okay, good. So everybody say, so this is model number one. And again, if there's such a mikvah is built and it's maintained, you know, and mounted properly, then it's a good mikvah. No time, there are no halachic issues, but everything is done properly. So because of these problems, other poskim preferred another kind of mikvah, which is based on a mishnah also. What's a mishnah that appears in Maseches Mikvos, and it's a similar principle, and we usually call it zuria to differentiate it from hashapa. There's a big question of lomdus whether it really is a different principle or not, but that's not right now. But basically what Zuriya means as follows, literally planting. So the Mishnah describes that, what if I have a mikvah, and the mikvah is full of 40 saw of megashamim, right? So it's perfectly a kosher mikvah. And now I have an empty mikvah over here, okay? And I want to take water out of a barrel. So the Mishnah says, memali adam b'ketef, you can take water in a barrel on your shoulder, and begin to pour it into this mikvah. And slowly but surely, what's going to happen once you overflow? What's going to happen? It's going to flow over you, assuming that this is situated properly, that it overflows not all over the floor. But let's say this mikvah is a little bit, the Mishnah describes it, if you have one on top, they're on an incline of a hill. So when you overflow, the first mikvah is going to flow directly into the next mikvah. So the water is going to overflow into here, and eventually you're going to reach the point where you got a lot of water here. You have 40 saw here also. What is the status of this water? Is this kosher water or possible water? What's the answer? Mishnah says it's kosher water. Mamali of Meketef, Mamali, it's Hetagom, because Mishnah says that all the water that was planted in here, the Mayim Sheuvin, that got planted into here, lost its status of Mayim Sheuvin, became a mikvah, and now, what do you have? Lo and behold, what do you have? Now you have two kosher mikvahs. Magic, right? You took 40 saw of rainwater and you turned it into two kosher mikvahs. Right, that's the magic of those mikvahs. That's the principle called Zuriya. Now, you can just imagine, if I could pull off a stunt to build a mikvah this way, build two holes, fill up one with making shaman, like, you know, wait till the rains, and make sure my pipes are all clean, and everything is gavaldik, wonderful, fill it up, and now, right after I do that, then overflow it into another one, what can I do? I can simply want, every night, I'll do the same thing, or every couple of nights, every week, whatever, I have to feel that I have to clean up the mikvah again. So every once I want to refill the mikvah, I will not refill the mikvah with pipes going directly into here. That's a no-no. What model was that used for? That was the Hashocha model, right? In the Hashocha model, so the water is filling up minachutz from pipes, from literally regular water pipes into here. Here, the filling up the water is not from here. The filling up the water is from here. The pipes are going through here, into here, overflowing into here. Now you have two kosher mikvahs. Again, this mikvah will be closed up, locked up. No one's ever going to see this mikvah. What do? Where are the women tovlos? The tovlos here. When I refill the mikvah every night, every couple of nights, I refill the derech zuria and have a perfectly, beautifully clean mikvah. Shalom Yisrael, gevaldik. That's the principle of zuria. What unbelievable ma'ilas do we have in this mikvah? What were the two concerns we have with our shofar mikvah? Yeah. That someone's going to forget to close the hole. To open the hole, what's the answer? Ain't no hole. There's no hole.
Water will go. What
are we afraid of? That somebody didn't fill it up properly. We didn't fill it properly. The only way to fill up the mikvah, there's only one way to fill it up. The pipes, the faucet only goes into this mikvah. The faucet doesn't go into an empty mikvah. So the only physical way to fill up the mikvah is through the derech zuria. It's going to fill up the air. So you're going to get the 40 saw. So this is a foolproof mikvah. This is a gewaldige mikvah. So this mikvah was the mikvah that was used in Preshburg, in Hungary, under the supervision of the Chassam Zeitler. How do we know that? Because he writes in the Shuvi, describes exactly this model. Word for word, he says, it's based on the Mishnah and the 70 rolls. He describes exactly what it looked like. It was two holes. And he says, and they had a great, neat system that anytime they ever wanted to clean the mikvah, no big deal, they didn't even have to put the mikvah out of commission for one night. What did they do? They never had to put the mikvah out of commission. What did they do? They just switched teams. Namely, that, let's say, this was the original 40 saw. So now they use this mikvah for a while. And then even after some time, if you want to clean this out, what do you do? Empty it out. And what? And go backwards. Put in the book for this. So he says, that's what we did. That's what we did in Preshburg. He says, and he writes at the end of the tshuva, there's no greater mikvah in the world than this. And this is the Hebrew of Mahudra of Mikvahs. It's a mishnah right out of the set of Mikvahs. Zuriyah is about no problems, no shopping, no human error. Everything's about nothing to happen to go wrong.
So the Sheuvin went into the rainwater on the left
right,
side.
That's right.
That's right. Right. But you have to be careful that you don't have more than
no. Because I forgot to tell you the most important part. Once you have a kosher mikvah, once you have 40 saw, you can put in a billion tons of shuvin. Uh-huh. Nothing happens. The shuvin don't do that. Okay. We have to be.
It's an important point.
It's an important point. The Rashbam says it's not true, but everyone else says it. The Mishnah said almost always came out with errors, and that's true. So Rishbam tucked away in Babas, in the middle of 176 miles of Babas, there's a line that Babas doesn't sound the way, but nobody else thought that. Okay, so the Rocha didn't make it, but. Okay, so let's say, getting back to that story. So why are we wasting our time building a shocker? What's wrong with Tzvias? So notwithstanding what the Haile Chassam Sofer said, that there's no one in the world could possibly apostle such a mikvah. Why anyone could apostle anything? Not so simple. There is a Gemara that talks about a sugya in Masechet Yevamos called Nachal Tsa v'Nachal Tsa. A person has a mikvah of Megi Shamim, and I put some water in, some shuvim in, and I take some of the water out. So I started out with 40 Megi Shamim. I put in one Tsa of Pasal water. Then I take out a Tsa of a little bit of kosher water, a little Pasal water, and I keep on doing that, keep it in Nachal Tsa v'Nachal Tsa v'Nachal Tsa v'Nachal Tsa v'Nachal Tsa. The Gemara says you could do that ad gubo. As long as the rove of the original 40 saw is still intact, notice the number rove, the rove of the original water is still there, the real rainwater, will the real rainwater stand up, as long as that rove of that rainwater is still there, then the mikvah is kosher. As soon as you dip beneath that point of the rove, then you have a problem with the mikvah. Now, I just read that Gemara to you in Masechet Yevamos, and I translated that Gemara as talking about Mayim Shuvim. The Gemara never says the word Mayim Shuvim. The Gemara says, Nachal Tsa v'Nachal Tsa. According to most Rishon, the Gemara is not even talking about Mayim Shuvim. It's talking about other liquids, other beverages. The Gemara is completely irrelevant to that discussion. But there was some Rishon who read the Gemara exactly what I just said, and the most prominent of those Rishon was the Ravid. The Ravid says that Nachal Tsa v'Nachal Tsa is good. It's no problem. You start out with 40 Tsa, and you keep on putting some, taking out, putting up, that's fine, that's great, everything's wonderful. But, says the Ravid, provided that the original 20 saw plus are still intact. The minute you dip beneath the 50% point, then the entire mikvah becomes possible. That's the Shita's Ravid. Rav Hashem did not accept that. Rav Hashem said the Gemara is not even talking about Hashem, it's all about a totally different topic, but the Ravid does say that. So came along a group of poskim and said, wait a second. Anytime you build a mikvah based on this kunz, Azriya, you are automatically running into what problem? Of you have the nusans of it on your hands. You have a very, very big problem. Because You turn 40 into 80. What is math done? All those math majors? When you turn 40 into 80, so each mikveh now has a little bit of kosher water, a little bit of posel water. How in the world do you know what the proportions are? And you do it 2, 3, 4, 5 times, do it for a week, do it for a month. Inevitably, what are you going to be left with? Significantly less than a robe. So if you pull off the stunt every night in the mikveh, so you're going to tell me, Baruch HaKadosh, you still have 20 plus saw of rainwater? Yeah, do you mind? What do you mean, 20? How in the world are you going to have 20 plus saw of rainwater? It's not shy. You're always pushing some water out, so eventually you're going to have 100% of just plain city water. So according to Rabbi Rishon, will say, who cares? So what? There's no limitation. Once you do Zaria, everything is good. You can do Zaria for 1,000,000 years, everything's fine. So great. That's not some sort of thing. You can do Zaria for 1,000,000 years and don't worry about it. But those who want to be pressured for the right bid, so all of a sudden raise a red flag about these mikvahs. Every Zaria mikvah runs there. If you do it more than once, if you do it a couple of times, you're in a pickle. So the question is, do we, are we chayshir for this ravid or not? So the answer is no. The answer is that the ikra din the shulchan aruch doesn't quote the ravid. The shach quotes it. The shach quotes, maybe you should try the chilim, but lemaisa mikra din, we don't.
Can you repeat the ravid's chumrah?
The ravid says that if you start out with 40 saw of rainwater and you keep on adding on city water, and in a sense adding, taking, when you reach the point that the original 40, the robe of the original 40 of rainwater is not there anymore, then the whole is possible. So the Ikra Din is that we don't possibly. And this was, who's the biggest supporter of that view, that we don't follow this rabbit, and we're not chayim this rabbit? That was the Chazanish. Chazanish said, Chazam Seifer. Chazam Seifer said, there's no better mikveh than this. Chazam Seifer wasn't Gerir, so it wasn't Messiah Chesed. Chazanish writes, in very, very bad terms, we don't follow this rabbit. Finished. End of discussion. Nobody's question to describe it. And finished. And nothing else to talk about. We have a cloud of Rishonim called the Shachmas, a cloud from Rishonim that we try to be choshish for every Das Yochid and Yochid Mikvos. Says the Chazanish. Not every. Almost every. But not every. It's impossible. You can't be choshish for this rabbit. It's impossible. And therefore, the Chazanish says, when you build the mikvah, the correct way to build the mikvah, says the Chazanish, is there of Zaria. Don't waste your time building a shopah, just build a zriya, and everything is hunky-dory. You build a shopah, you're asking for trouble, you're asking for human error. Zriya is a safer way to build a mikvah, and just forget about the rabbi. Adka. That was the approach of the Chazanish. So there are others who said, well, the rabbi. You don't want to just throw the rabbi out. Maybe Efshal Kavishtan. Maybe we can be chayshish for the rabbi. How can we do that? Combine the two models together. And this begins the introduction to Manadei Mikvos. Manadei Mikvos are built on this combination of factors. Namely, we're going to, instead of building, we thought when we started off the Shia saying that all you need is one hole in the ground, right? That's called the Bor Tevila, one hole in the ground. So now we're saying, no, that's not going to work for more than one night. So you have to have a Bor Hashaka. And then we said, but we don't like the bar shakas, they're too risky, the holes are too risky, we don't know what to do with ourselves. So therefore, we want to chuck the bar shakas and build on the bar is real. But now we're saying, wait a second, bar is real, are too risky because of the rivet. So what do? Combine the two. Namely, build three holes in the ground. What's the difference? Each hole in the ground costs you another $5,000 to dig some ground. Big deal. We've got plenty of money to throw around, okay? Like, it's like buying an Esther. You pay for chumrah, you pay for every hole's going to cost you a few $1,000. So here you have, you need a base to feel, otherwise there's no way to go into the mikvah. You need a place to go into the mikvah, so you got to build that hole. Then you need a bar shafa, because you need a bar shafa. You need a bar zriya, because you're not too thrilled about your bar shafa. You need a bar shafa, because you're not too thrilled about your bar zriya. But you hope and pray that the only thing that could really go wrong, that could ruin this tefillah, is number one, if the woman really, really messed up and didn't fill it up originally, and the rabbi's right. If both of those things are true, so then you have karma. But either one of those are wrong, so then we're good to go. That's makes better. So this is a safe way of building mikvahs. It's a little bit, needs a little more room, a little more more construction. But if you build the base, a bar tefillah with the bar zriya and the bar shakah, that's great. Now when you fill them up, don't forget, you fill them up totally differently. Remember, when you fill up a bar zriya, so where does the water go? How do you fill up?
It overflows.
So you have pipes going into the bar zriya. Over here, when you fill up using the ma'ala bar shaka, where does the water go into? It goes, in theory, directly into the base tefillah. You don't really have to do that. You don't have to fill up twice. What do?
Just
do a shaka after you send the Surya. So you do actually have shnei, right? So you fill up the mikvah through the board's area, the water overflows to the board's field. You open up the hole, you do your hashava, leave the hole open, and even if you goofed and closed the hole, big deal. And even if by some quirk the woman forgot to fill it up properly at first, big deal, because you always have a chsam sofer to hold on to. So when you come up to the Kisya Kov and they ask you, why are you titling the board's area? The chsam sofer says, butlachatchila. The rabbi says it's possible, but chsam sofer says, butlachatchila. So this is the basic model, the basic tour of all the mitzvahs that are built today, are based on this combination effect.
Build the
board
shaka so it touches the
board
of Zriya? Zriya,
sorry. So what would the goal of that be?
Meaning that the board of Zriya would then always be connected to a board
No, but you're more important. You want to make sure your board Tvila is touching the board of shaka.
No, but I'm saying, but the problem is that maybe you'd have the board of Zriya become my shuvim.
Okay, hold on. How are we going to try to solve this? Okay, so this is the Gevaldika model. So the Chazon Ish was well aware of this model, and he was completely against this model. Chazanish did not like this model. Chazanish said we should go back, Chazanish make a kedem, do what they did in Hungary, in Pressburg, in Kamsarika, just build a bar shaka. Don't build a bar shaka. For two reasons, said the Chazanish. One is halachic, one is quasi. Comes the Chazanish and said, you gained nothing by putting in a bar shaka. What was your goal? What was your agenda for the bar shaka? What were you trying to fulfill? You told me you had to who? The rabbi. Says the Chazanish, you're joking, you're kidding yourself if you think you're here to the rabbi. Why? After enough time, when the bar tevila and the bar shaka are open to one another, when are they open? Bishas tevila. When does water move? Bishas tevila. You do that, you have 50 women using the mikvah tonight. 50 women do that by in the course of 3-4 days, 500 women have used this mikvah. The water has so moved around, you have to have absolute ruach hakodesh to know you still have your original 20 saw there. The same way that the Ravid says you don't have your original 20 saw there after the board's re-is used a couple of times, you're going to have the exact same problem with the bar shaka. So mayahalei rabban. So you wasted zebra money, you wasted $5,000 to build a hole, you drive everybody crazy, you're driving the woman crazy to make sure the holes are open. Says the Chazon Ish, you didn't gain anything because the whole thing, the only mile that you had of the bar shaka was to be said, Ravid, you didn't get the Ravid anyway. That's the Chazon Ish's first time. Then the Chazon Ish had a second time. He says, and you lost. Happened to Bar Shaka. What'd you lose? Dirt. Bacteria. He said, you made the mikveh dirtier. Why? Very simple. Bar Zriya is much more hygienic. Why is that? Clean all the time. Nothing ever sits there. The water constantly replenishes itself. Bar Shaka, you filled up once and it sits
forever.
I don't want to say forever, but it sits for a long time. Things that sit forever tend to collect things. So you're going to throw in all kind of stuff, all kind of, chlorine and bisalach and stuff, chemicals to kill it. At the end of the day, there's still going to be stuff in the mikvah. And what's going to happen? Not only is the bar shaka eventually going to start to collect stuff, but every time you open that hole, which is every night for hours on end, what's going to happen? All the gunk that's sitting in the bar shaka for the last 6 months is going to roll right into the base tefillah, and somebody's going to get wind of this. Someone's going to find out about this, someone's going to get dirty, someone's going to get sick, so they're nasty. Says the Chazon Ish. He says, if you mamish gained up your lacha, then you have to make an educated decision. Is it worth the risk to gain the mile of the rabbit? But you're not gaining the rabbit anyway. You stop, you're wasting money, you gain nothing, and you're getting the mikveh to be dirtier, you gain mamish absolutely nothing. Therefore, don't do bar shakas. Just don't waste your time, don't waste your money, don't build bar shakas. That's what appears in the Torah Shabbat in the Chazon Ish. The Torah states in the Chazon Ish in your Then the Torah Shabbat begins. And I preface by saying the Torah Shabbat that the Chazon Ish is quoted as saying, never believe anything that's quoted in his name unless you see it in print. Because the problem is, that particular line is not in print anywhere, so you have no idea whether he said it or not. But the Dersh about that is that the Chazon Ish, and again, this is off the official record, that the Chazon Ish was concerned with the Misrad HaBriyut, that the Department of Health, he was afraid someone's going to get wind of dirty mikvahs and is going to stop the cold out of the mikvahs. That's what he was afraid of. And he said that I'd rather have a Chazam Sofer Kosh L'Chachil L'Chil Mikvah, that you're wasting your time and your money and you're potentially putting the whole mikvah existential at risk. Don't do it. Don't build yourself a bar hashem. It's not worth it, says the Chazon Ish. That's why in Bnei Brak and other places in Eretz Yisrael, under the period of the Chazon Ish and after, there were many mikvahs that were built on the simple old style model of bar shakas. However, others wanted to go one step past the Chazon Ish. They wanted to say, you know what? We hear the Chazon Ish's complaint. We hear his concern. But maybe we could still chop around your rider. Are there ways to chop around your rider or not? So now it gets a very, very murky area in terms of this is like it was like a Torah Mada part of this discussion. Can we prove when the Chazanish's scientific statement is correct that eventually, after enough time, the Bar Shok will also disappear beneath Tvanisa? Or maybe no, maybe it's not true. Maybe the water doesn't start disappearing so fast as the Chazanish is claiming that it does. How would we test that? How in the world would we test that? So there are multiple ways of testing that. So there's a low-tech way of dyeing the water. I think there was some of the rabbis in Eitzah that try a couple of tests, dye the water and see what happens. And then you had the more high-pollutant test, the what?
Isotopes.
Different record. Isotopes. Different heavy water. Different kinds of waters. And you can eventually test it and see, is the original water really there? So whereas in the days of Chasam Sofer, you have to rely on pure Ruach HaKodesh. So now we have our atomic test to try to figure out. So we're running a whole new reactor in the middle of our balls to try to figure out. I'm not sure what the answer to any of these questions was. I have absolutely no idea. So, well, you just imagine when you run these kind of testing, that look at what the results are of these tests are. Fine. So back to the next stage. So somebody came up with a gewaldige idea and said, a little more mad here, we can build a Bor HaShoka that will address the concern of the Raivit, those who want to be chashish for the Raivit, and we'll leave the isotopes for the science lab. We can figure out and aid some simple rules of science, simple ABCs of physics, to build the Bor HaShoka and be fairly comfortable that the Bor HaShoka will remain intact for a very, very long amount of time. It's a very simple principle. You know what it's called? Give me a hint. It's called Sir Isaac Newton. Okay, so the apple fall in your head. It's gravity, basic gravity. What does that mean? This is what we call a split-level Bor HaShoka. Okay? Namely, if you got money, so, hey, what's the big deal? So another hole in the ground, right? We already threw three holes in the ground, throw a fourth hole in the ground. But throw the hole on top of another hole. What do we mean by that? Build a two-level Bor HaShoka. I made it round for no reason. It's really weird. Look at this one. Just go another couple of feet down. The guy's in there anyway. The guy with the bib. What's the guy? The bulldozer over there.
Scooper.
What's his name? Scooper, right? Scooper. What?
Scooper.
No, the guy from what's the Bob and Bulldozer. What's the guy? Tizzy's the guy with the cement, right? Dizzy, huh? No, guys. Guys not holding. Scooper, that's the guy. Bob and Tizzy. Okay. So what you do is very simple. You dig it much deeper, twice the amount. So you have 40 saw here. In fact, you just gotta wait for a bigger rain, that's all. So you deep down, and you create a kosher mikvah on the bottom. Now, what do? You put a piece of wood or plywood or twice of that, something in between the two. And what do you put in the middle? Open a little hole of how much? And now you have two mikvahs. So you have a kosher mikveh down here, another kosher mikveh down here, and now you have a baris tefillah. So what is this? What do you say for this? This water on the bottom is being drawn down by gravity. And even though this water is moving, there's a lot of switching of water, but there's much less switching of water from here to here because gravity is drawing down the original water. Now again, scientifically, we have some water switching, probably some, but significantly less. And therefore, the odds are that this originally 40 saw of rainwater is going to last, what? For much, much longer. It doesn't have to last forever and ever, because at some point we'll probably want to clean the Bor HaShoka anyway, every couple of years. So we're going to want to clean up the Bor HaShoka eventually. But we could be pretty comfortable that building this complicated double HaShoka will satisfy the principle derived. So when a person is toiling in this base tefillah, this Bor tefillah, even if the Bor's Riyah is off because of the Raivid, you always have this as a backup, this double HaShoka as a backup. Again, assuming the holes are open, okay, fine. This hole will always leave open. No one's going to go scuba diving every week to open and close it. So we'll keep this open, and this will keep open and closed depending on whether people toggle in there. And Shalom Yisrael and Gavaldik. So it's not a bad aid. Again, even worst case, let's say it's wrong. Let's say we goofed. Let's say Zolzayin that we goofed. So what? So what do we still have? We still have some cipher. We have Rov Rishon in the Shulchan. I mean, we're not going to, lose. We have a Chazanish. Chazanish didn't have any of this stuff. And he let people in Bnei Brak Lechachilah use the Bor's Riyah alone. So this is a safeguard to be Chash for the Raivit. It may work, probably work, maybe it works. Who knows if it works? We'll try it for another couple of $1,000. We'll try it. And this has become standard practice in Mikvahs today. In America, all the Mikvahs that are built now are built with this kind of a backup system. If you think about it,
you have the basic Bor Zriah also.
Do you have a double Bor Zriah also?
No. You just
yeah. You always have Bor Zriah. Yeah.
You still have the Bor Zriah.
Yeah. For sure. Yeah. Now I didn't even tell you why we're going to build a backup Bor Zriah also. But that's really another $5,000. Okay.
How often does the bottom have to be open?
We like it to be open because otherwise then we're relying on the Rebbe Ruch and the Rosh, so we might as well keep it open. Okay? Now, if we could figure out an Eitzah, I'd like to make this hole a little smaller. If I could, I'd make a small hole. Why? The smaller the hole, the less chance of water transfer. What's my problem? But I need a chibra. I need a Nechav HaShop. I need a first note. So there is a Rosh that's beyond the scope right now, that has the possibility that you may not need such a big hole. That, based on the whole mission of the Sons of Wealth, it could be that under these unique circumstances, you maybe have to get away with it. You want almost a pinhole. And there was a suggestion that was made by the Chelkas Yaakov. Yaakov was the Dayan in Switzerland. Yes, it was Dayan Breisch, Yaakov Breisch. He suggested this model. This was already common in Europe after the war. He suggested this model of building a foot level bar shaka, but he was pushing to having a very, very small hole here. He had a whole chedev, a whole calculation why he thought that would be better. And they built certain mikvahs in Europe were built using that model. Others did not like that model, but Rosh Sternberg has it. He was adamantly opposed to that model. He thought that model creates more problems than it creates solutions. He thought that it undermines certain kashrus and all that. It's that big of the running mechlekes I'm talking about. Is it a good model? But Rav Breisch was so in favor of that model. They're actually mikvahs that were built that way. Now that I've started to happen in practice. When we had our plans ready to build the mikvahs, and we showed me the architectural plans. It was the split level of Hashapa, like the diagonal, these rules. At the time, we had spoken to Diaposit, right, from Washington Heights, who was involved in this. He's younger, involved with the construction of any mikvahs around the New York, New Jersey area. So we had asked them to help us. We were ready. That mikvah was built almost 20 years ago already, so he was ready, it's hard for him to build a mikvah, it's not just the middle of the lot, he had to jump and climb walls and jump into the water. So he felt he wasn't up to it anymore, so he's the one who sent us to Charlie Klein, who was a Swedish fellow from Monroe, who was recommended by Diane Posen. So all of a sudden, one night, as we were getting ready to start some of this construction, all of a sudden, like a thought, I remember my house in Paramus, I remember all of a sudden, thought hit me. I said, wait a second. I said, Diane Posen is a Talmud of Diane Weiss, of the Michas Yitzchak. Family of the family. Diane Weiss and Diane Breisch were Mechutanim. He was in London, he was in Switzerland. They were close to one another. All of a sudden, I got this bug in my head that maybe the Messiah that Rabbi Posen has when he constructs these mikvahs, when he writes out the plans, is following his Rabbi's Mechutanim. Maybe that was all, because he has European Mahalach was to follow this Diane Breisch's Mahalach. So all of a sudden, I got this thought in my back of my head, oh no, they're going to build me a mikvah in Paramus, and they're going to build it with the small than Shafaris and not whole, which some post people are vehemently opposed to. So I picked up the phone, I still remember, I called him in a cold sweat, I called up Rabbi Klein, the Satan Chosid from Monroe, and I asked him one question. I said, just sorry to bother you late at night, and there's one question that's bothering me tonight. I said, tell me how big is the hole between the top level and the bottom level of the split level bar shock. So I remember he said to me, he says, first, a noise! You think I'm doing anything different? Oh my God, blush. He's like, oh, taking him out, but even thought that he would clinch it and he would build like the Switzerland bomb. So happy to say that the Mikvah Paramus has a split level bar shaka with the Shifras Anod, according to the view of Ersternbruch, against the view of Diane Breisch, in case anyone's interested in that piece of information. Okay. Anyway, Chuck.
That's a half a minute to use less than the Shifras Anod.
It's better because it cuts down on the water.
So that's this rush that
sometimes you can get away with less than Shifras Anod. It started out as a one mikvah and then became two mikvahs, so then maybe you don't even need Shifras Anod.
Does this help with the cleanliness problem, or
are
you still the same cleanliness problem the
foundation documents? Yeah, okay, yes. You know, we are a little bit less worried about the cleanliness. We have so much chlorine in the club. We have so many good ways of cleaning the bowls today. We're not as concerned. Oh, Tazoy, very good, excellent. Okay, great. So somebody came up with a great idea and said, wait a second. He said, if you really believe that this gravity exists, you believe in Sarai's that gravity exists, you believe this is going to solve the problem, why are we wasting our time with the Bor Zeriah for? Why are we wasting our time with it with a split level Bor HaShachar? He said, I have a much simpler way to build a mikvah. One hole. You have one hole, a big hole, a deep hole, and then just split it in half. Namely, make a big hole, 80 saw deep, put a board in between, make a little hole over here, and finished. Make a mikvah. And that's your mikvah. Here's your 40 saw. Clean the mikvah whenever you want. Put a stopper or something when you want to clean up the mikvah. Clean it out the top and refill on top. You don't need a bozeria. You have a shach. Ain't a shach. What was the whole concern not to do a shach? What were we nervous about a shach? We're afraid maybe what? Maybe it didn't reach. Nothing's going to go wrong here. As long as you don't keep that hole closed. It's much safer. You don't need bozerias for it. And you have the right. Show my Yisrael. It's the most evolved community to mikvah around. Who came up with this grandiose idea before the Chazanish? Who came up with this grandiose idea? That's Lubavitch mikvah. That is the famous Lubavitch. That's the Chabad mikvah. That's called the Bor Agavi Bor. They cut out all the extraneous barriers. What do you need Zriyas for? You need Tfilas for the Bor Agavi Bor. You need Shokas and double Bor Shokas and Maisalach. They just do a Bor Agavi Bor and show my Yisrael. It's the best mikvah. It's better than everything. That's Lubavitch's claim. It's better than everything. And you know what? Besides being better, what else is it?
Cheaper.
Especially if you live in a little Wyoming and you're trying to build a mikvah for $25,000 instead of $3 million like a T-Net, so it's much easier. Easy to maintain, very little to go wrong. So why doesn't everybody do it? Because Divrei Chaim, the son of Rav, said that the mikvah is possible. Why? He said because there's no chibur mikvahs up and down. Chibur mikvahs only works horizontally, not vertically. How do you know that? It was his way of reading a certain Mishnah that everybody else read differently, and most people, many people read differently. But he claimed the right from Mishnah, Ketafra, Seder Chibur, those who said it was Git, the beginning of second barak, the son of Rav, the Divrei Chaim claimed that there's no such thing, there's no Chibur Bechlal. And therefore, there's no connection between the two. So when you're titling in the top mikvah, you're titling in a bathtub, in a glorified bathtub. It's not Mechubit to the bottom mikvah, Bechlal, and therefore the whole mikvah is possible. That was the Divrei Chaim's title. Now, do we paskin like this to Bechaim? Well, when it comes to making a backup of a backup of a backup of a backup, it's never will grow up to Bechaim. But to build the entire mikvah based on anti-Bechaim, we get a little bit nervous about. Now, that's the bad news. The good news is that the way the mikvahs are built today, the Lubavitcher mikvahs today, are probably not even a problem according to Bechaim for the following reason. That the original Lubavitcher mikvahs were not literally a hole on top of not one board on top of another. There were actually pipes connecting between the top and the bottom. So there are many who claim that the Divrei Chaim only passed when you have to be mechaber the mikvahs through some real bona fide opening. If it's one hole in the ground, you just threw a piece of board, a piece of wood in the middle, that's not chibur mikvahs. You know what that's called? That's mikveh echad. It's one mikvah. It has a little bit of a, it has a board in the middle of it. That's not a chibur mikvahs. And you know, even the Divrei Chaim, who says that? There's a sefer that's written by Yirmiyah Katz. Yirmiyah Katz was one of the big place in Hilchos Mikvahs. He was in Brooklyn, and he wrote a lot of the picture books in Hilchos Mikvahs. So he has an entire chapter dedicated to try to prove to you that even the Machmirim, even those the Chassidim who refused to use Lubavitcher Mikvahs because of the Divrei Chaim, even they would concede that the way the Mikvahs are built by Chabad today, they would be kosher even according to the anti-Chabad Mikvahs of 100 years ago.
Yeah, not combined, and what's the whole point of it? The whole point that they should be combined?
No, they're better than combined. It's one mikvah. It's one structure. It's not two structures. Chibur mikvahs says you have two separate structures trying to combine into a pipe, so that they become like pipes going up and down. They don't like pipes going sideways. But if it's one mikvah, that's okay. So yesh v'yesh. So again, the bottom line is, in the world today, mikvahs are built in multiple ways. There are still mikvahs put there to scroll with just one three. I don't know, not up to date with the construction mikvahs there. So I don't know. But there were definitely, no question about it, there were definitely mikvahs that were constructed, I'm sure it's still used today. They were built just Chazanish style, just the bozerias, like in Hungary, like the old style. Then you had mikvahs that were built, the old mikvahs in America were built, old, I don't know how they go back, old is, that were built with just bar tefillah as a bar zriya, the bar shachas, and finished. Then you have this innovative idea of I can't tell you exactly dated when the split level started, but now the Mikvahs, to the best of my knowledge, I think it's becoming pretty much standard that they're using the split level bar shachas. And then you have Lubavitcher Mikvahs that are just the old Lubavitcher style of just borrowing bar and calling it a day. There are certain communities that want to make everybody happy. So some of them have Mikvahs that are built not just Lubavitcher style, they're built with the regular, like everybody else is doing, but they'll throw in a Lubavitcher Mikvah for good luck. Namely, they'll build a hole in the bottom. Why? Because Lubavitchers don't want to use the other. Because that's what the Rebbe said, the Rebbe Rashab, Sholem Ben said, you have to build them this way. So they don't want to give any other Mikvah. Even though the other Mikvahs are Mishnayis, and are perfectly okay, they don't want to have any other kind of mikvah, so they'll only use this guy. So yes, say there's Lubavitcher presence in the community, so then they'll build that in for the book as well. So one of the mikvahs in town that was constructed, not the regular Tina mikvah, different mikvah somewhere in the county, I'll not reveal the community, but it had an interesting mix. It was actually constructed by Lubavitch. It was supervised by Satma Chosid, Rabbi Klein, actually supervision from Monroe. And they built a regular standard mikvah with all the kunst that we said. And because it was basically funded by Lubavitch, so they threw the Lubavitch into the bottom also. And then to make life even better, they put a mine also. They dug on the ground, they dug up, and you have a lot of money, you do a lot of fun things. And okay, so pretty much we finished the first half of the Sugi, that should be. That's the bad news. The good news is that the second half is going to take much faster. Only because we're going to make it faster. It is long also, but we're going to try to finish up soon. Okay, yeah.
So how for Goro Galibor, gravity doesn't have any problems with it, right? Like, they're not going to mix them in?
Again,
so it's colder. They're only heating up the top water, so I think hot water might be
lighter. Oh, there you go. Okay, see. That's what Rabbi Holian's got. They got the science. Okay, maybe. Okay, but then there's something else that can mamash destroy, because that's called Zochlin. Zochlin means when you have rainwater, if the rainwater is moving, it's a disaster. Rainwater on the move is bad news. In Zochlin, the Tarkonim was out of a posuk, and according to the overwhelming majority of poskim, it's a din deraisa. There's one tucked away sheet that they say it's derabanan, but we generally assume that mayim shuvah that move is a problem in deraisa. If it's made mayim that moves, then it's okay. May mayim all be on the move, all underground streams move, all underground streams move, but if it's making shaman, now we all know there's a water cycle, there's all the same water, but luckily it's mikvah, depending on where it came from last. So the last spot that this water came from with the clouds, that's called Megashon. If the last spot it came from on the ground, that's called Mayan. So May Mayan is a lot of movement, Akila, May Shavim cannot move, even B'diavad, again, for most opinions, it's actually going to be possible Gomer. So Zochlin is something you have to be very, very careful with when you go to Mikvah on a few different scenarios. One thing that could potentially create a problem with Zochlin is cracks in the Mikvah. Let's say I have a beautiful mikvah, built $3 million mikvah, now there are cracks in the walls. And now some of the water is seeping out, it's moving, it's leaving the mikvah. So that's a potential problem with Zochlin. According to some Rishonim, there's actually a mishnah that talks about this topic. But the other Rishonim, there's no such mishnah, but it's true anyway. But the other Rishonim, did is not true. But Shulchan Aruch not clear that if you have cracks in a mikvah, that could potentially disqualify a mikvah. Now, not every crack is automatically going to spell doom for a mikvah, depending on where the crack is, if it's above the 40 cell line, below the 40 cell line, is it what's called a schila in the keras, a schila in the keras, is it a crack that's very, very recognizable, people can see the water sitting out, is it not so clear, how do you define the keras, so it's very, very nitty gritty as to define the problem, but suffice to say, it's something that we don't want to see happening in the mikvah. If it ever comes to the attention that there's a crack in the mikvah, well, the mikvah woman, something will notice it, she'll notice that the water level seems to be going down, and can't explain the way why the water level is going down after a couple of nights. So it has to be taken care of, by the way. You have to get it fixed up, and sometimes it means you have to drain out the whole mikvah, depending on where the crack is. So again, that's something that maintenance of the mikvah, basic maintenance of the mikvah. We try as best as we can to avoid that problem in the first place. That's why we build that mikvah with the highest level of cement. We try to make it very, very good, high-quality stuff. It's not going to crack so easily. I remember when I spoke to Rabbi Klein about talking about the different kinds of cement using. So he was holding, I don't think he went to high school, but he was holding mamash in the science of the engineering, the plumbing, the cement, that he had everything mamash in way, 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 way advanced, more than I was in terms of understanding anything about mikvahs. So he was mamash in the top of his game in terms of that. So we try to use the highest quality cement, we use reinforced cement, we use metal inside the cement, that opens a whole other shadow of the mice, we try for the best, shoot for the stars to try to avoid cracks, but again, if it happens, then you have to deal with it sometime down the line. other potential issues of Zochlin that, that come our way are the issues of filters. If you have a filter in the vehicle, like all the folks here, filters, not many folks have filters today. If you have a filter, if the filter's off, so what is that going anywhere? If the filter's on, then the water is going, the water is moving into the filter, and that becomes a very complicated story. Whether that's really called Zochlin or not. Some of the reasons why maybe it's not called Zochlin, as there are more than close to Rivash that says, the Zochlin is only when the water leaves and the mikvah doesn't come back in. When the water leaves and just comes right back again from the other side, maybe that's not called Zochlin. That's a very complicated story that may or may not always be true. So therefore, we try very, very hard that the filter should be off when people use the mikvah. So we used to have all kinds of systems. We still have systems in the mikvah to make sure that people know the filter is on. They have alarm systems, they have lights. Some mikvahs you walk into and the filter's on, it looks like a flashing disco light or something. But some people don't understand that. They just think it makes it nice, you know, exciting. You know, some people don't understand. Anyway, so this is, you have to be very careful. People use the mikvah after hours. Sometimes the mikvah lady will say, listen, you're coming at 2 o'clock in the morning because it's 8, but here's the keys and, you know, use it. You have to just make sure, she has to make sure that all the filters are off, everything is done properly. So a tefillah with the filter on can become a potentially very serious shadow. The Moshe is a suffix, whether for tefillah of men, for Ezra, that kind of stuff. Whether having a filter on would pose a problem. It's a woman's shayla. That's beautiful pools. That's two of men, so you can use Manish Rubin. So swimming pool would be okay for that. But if the filter's on, that may not be a problem of Shuvin. So some people want to be tied all the time on Friday, so they don't want to bother going to the mikvah, they want to jump into the pool to summertime or something. That would be okay as long as the filter's off. That would be perfectly acceptable. You know, it's 100% Manish Rubin for these purposes, for that mimic, Tefillah Ezra, whatever it is. So the most of the favorites said that might sure will be good. Okay. A very, very important issue that comes up in terms of the Zochlin is not mikvahs per se, but it relates to other bodies of water. So we know that in theory you could tovel in the natural bodies of water, but provided that it meets the criteria that it's not Zochlin. Now it depends what kind of natural bodies it is. If it's spring water, then you could tovel even it is Zochlin. I mean mikvah is not mikvah, it's a ma'ayan, that's perfectly okay. But if it's rainwater, so then it has to be stationary. And there are certain bodies of water that are not clear what they are. So the Mishnah says in the Kabbalah, let's say you have a body of water that has some rainwater, some spring water, you follow a rove. So that's not always so easy to tell what the rove is. So that's where they get a whole sugya in the Masechta Sadar, in Shabbos, about rivers. Is a river considered to be fundamentally rainwater, fundamentally spring water? The Gemara says it depends. Different times of years are different. Different rivers are different. The Gemara describes in great detail the Euphrates, that's the most important river that Chazal was concerned with, in Bavel. So the Gemara discusses whether you can tovel in the Har Cross or not. So the Gemara says it depends what time of the year. So if it's in the rainy season, the spring season, when it just rained a lot and now a lot of the melted snow, snow is like rain. So when the melted snow is filling up with the source of the Euphrates, I don't know where it comes from. From the mountains in Turkey or something. So when all the snow is melting off the Turkish mountains, finding its way down into Iraq. So at certain times of the year, you can have a rove, make a shaman. The problem is rivers are always moving. So that make a shaman, there's a chilus. That's a very, very serious problem. If it's other times of the year, say in the fall, so then there's not had it rained in Iraq in the last 6 months, and all the snow melted 6 months ago, and now it's, the river's still full, that river is probably more spring water, and therefore it can't be resolved. That's what's also said. That Shmuel would let his daughters use the Euphrates River sometimes of the year, not other times of the year, depending on whether it was a springtime or whether it was a fall time. That's what the fair sheet month, the Shabbos, the Nadar,
why do the pipes not cause an issue with
Zochlin? Well, you're totally with that Zochlin. It's coming off, but once it hits Hashbaran, so now right now the water is stationary. Zochlin doesn't pass the water over. So the Gemara of the Ferish in the Sechas Shabbos and Sechas Nadar, a long round, there's one of the Sechas Nadar, a huge round about the rivers, about the Nar Pras. I remember when the second Gulf War broke out. So it broke out in the end of March, or so, a couple of days. It was in March time. So I remember there was a whole discussion the radio was listening to, explaining why did America invade Iraq after that day, because of the way the water current was at the Euphrates, that it was just overflowing at the right time, at the right place, everything was perfect, because this is the time of year, in the springtime, the Euphrates begins to overflow, a whole chagad is explaining on the radio. So I remember listening and saying, I could have given that exact same talk, because it's Iran, it's the dark, it's the exact. The world has changed a lot, the Euphrates River hasn't changed one huge ever in 6,000 years. Well, the 6,000 years for that matter, I'd be a girl, and I'd be a going to do the same thing. So in the springtime, it overflows, and in the fall time, it underflows. And that's why Kodesh Mool let his daughters use it in the fall, and not in the springtime. So when you have to be very, very careful when you have any kind of bodies of water. You have to be very, very nervous. Is it Nekesham? Is it Meimayan? and in control that it's make shabbos and zochman and not. So there happened to be a view of Rabbi Natan. There's not a chiddush based on his reading of certain gemaras that rivers are always okay. But after the way the rivers construct are, it always ends up to be rove meimayim. You never have to worry about making shabbos as a rove, and therefore you can always tell them rivers. There are more quotes that there were some Jewish communities in the Middle Ages that had no mitzvahs. There were tiny Jewish communities that had three families living in the middle of nowhere, and they didn't have money to build a mikvah. So they used to use the rivers. There are more quotes from the possession. You have no choice what you're going to do. So they relied on Rabbi Natan, even though most of the Rishonim thought that was a problem. They relied on Rabbi Natan. So in case anyone's interested about what was on the Shidduch resume back in the Middle Ages, so the woman had quotes from Mama Rutenberg that when people would ask about Shidduch and they want to know about this girl, so they would say, they would ask about the parents. They didn't ask what kind of parents they used, they didn't ask that question. But they would ask the question, did the mother of this girl, when she went to the mikveh, did she use a river or not? Did she rely on Rabbi Natan? Because there were people who didn't want to marry this girl because this girl was conceived by a woman who used the mikveh that according to Rabbi Rishonim was no good. That was the question. So now Rutenberg was furious about those questions. He said that first of all, Rabbi Natan looks up to the mutter, so you don't want to rely on Rabbi Natan, you don't pass on the 20 years later the girl that came from such a mikvah. And he says, and even according to those who disputed Rabbi Natan, was probably only absolved the Rabbanan because it wasn't the first one, it's a whole shit of terror. So he says, so don't have a chanuk about that. And even if it's a real psul there, I said, the kid's not a mom, no one's here, she's not the anyway. The whole thing doesn't matter anyway after Yalmacha, so leave the people alone, don't embarrass the, you embarrass this girl, you're not going to marry this girl because her mother used the mother went to Rabbi Natan's mikvah. That's a good stuff. That was Shidduchim in the 1200s. Okay, back to this. World hasn't changed much. Okay, back to our story. So you have to be very, very careful. You find yourself like this, you say you want to go jump into a lake or something, or jump into a river, jump into something, and use it in a mikvah. You have to be very, very careful that. Is it Meimayim? Is it Mekisham? If it's Mekisham, is it Abedim? Is it Abedim? Is it closed off? Is it Chemikar? It gets very, very complicated. So the goal is don't assume that any and every natural body of water is automatically functional. That's a bad assumption. Has to be ascertained case by case. Some bodies of water are okay, others are not. Remember years ago, I was approached by a group of people who were going to one of these national park areas somewhere out in the west, and they married a couple, it was like 2 weeks, and they wanted to know about a certain lake, whether this particular lake was kosher for mikvah or not. I had absolutely no idea. So I said, you have to find out for me, what's the source of the water? Is there a dam? Is it not a dam? Is it closed off? Not closed off? Is it open? Is it? So they got in touch with the park rangers. So they try to have this conversation with the park rangers and them, to try to figure out whether the dam is always open, always closed, always there. That's not the whole story. So it was September 11th. And the park ranger was not too impressed that somebody wanted to know about the water system in some national park or something. It didn't go over well. So we tried to explain to him that no, we're not international terrorists. We just want to know about ritual purity. So yeah, that went real, real well. Yogi Bear, from. Ranges. Okay, so bottom line is you got to make sure you get the facts right before you talk about anybody of water. There's one last included that I should have mentioned really back in the Shulvan thing. It's related to Shulvan, but it's a separate topic as well, that the Gemara has a Maseches Tmura, a very innovative way of potentially removing Shulvan. There may be a kunz to remove Psulah Mayim Shulvan. How you do that? It's called from Shachar. Shachar means if you take the Mayim Shulvan and you pour it on the ground, have it travel on the ground a little bit, so it loses potentially the status of shulvan. That's a very, very tricky halacha. It doesn't always apply, depends whether it's rope or not rope, and it's cheap, that's what's called hamshah. We'll leave you out all the details, but there is fundamentally such a principle called hamshah. Why am I talking about it? If we don't really do it, we do it as a path. Nobody today would ever build a mikvah, take regular rainwater and just do hamshah and call it a day. We don't do that. But what we do is, any and every time any water gets anywhere near a mikvah, we always throw a derech hamshah as an insurance of an insurance. Because Tosfos claims it solves the problem with the raisa, and the abundant maybe it solves the problems. So any water that gets anywhere near a mikvah, even though it's going through a shop of the Zriyas, and going through 5 billion other ways, any water that ever touched anywhere near a mikvah will also undergo a hamshacha. We'll have hamshacha coming off the pipes, even though it's coming through the pipes in the roof, in case somebody forgot to close up a screw head. So we'll throw a hamshachin for good luck. When we fill up a borzeria, we'll have the city water go through hamshachos. Every way you can put an hamshachin, put another hamshachin. There are different sheeters about how to do hamshachin, whether hamshachin needs karka, real or law, whether that's to have mamash, mamash dirt, or whether it's enough to have a tile or something, it's not going to go to another. So there are different reports and different systems about that. If you need dirt, we don't want anyone to see the dirt, so we have ways of covering up the dirt. And a lot of things. I saw once a mikvah that had, I mean, the face bottom, like, there was a filthy, dirty, with abshachas on top with some fancy schmancy, you know, up to date the tile. But when you uncover the tile, you see there's a water really going on the there's the real abshachas. Again, there are different sheets of abshachas. I told you one numerous story about abshachas that there is a famous shul talk with the scarab about abshachas, about what the nature of abshachas is. Abshachas, machshah, there's a, maybe not the lumbus for now. There's a whole chak lumbus that the scarab has about abshachas that helps out certain technical way that builds the mikvah. So I remember, this goes back about over 20 years ago, first when I went there, so soon after we got married, so I went to visit one of my wife's cousins, married, really Rishalmi, and he has a mikvah in his house, not just like a bathtub, for men, no men's mikvah, not just built in his bathtub. So he was so excited, you know, with his Yiddish, and a little bit of Yiddish, and my English, we kind of found something out of us. He was so excited to show me, he has an American cousin, you know, a new cousin, he started to show me, you know, it's mikvah, you know, so I know that him, you know that me. So he showed me this, and I saw as I'm shocked right away. So I said to him, I said, oh, I see, like the Brisker Rubs, yeah, the Brisker Rubs, chap, with I'm shocked. He put it like, he was like a ghost. He said, America, Shabbat, he said. He said, that's not Ramadan, he said, ma, this is Brisker Rubs. So anyway, he was very, very excited that we were talking about his Rishalmi. He thought he had discovered America. I don't want to tell him. He discovered his Brisker Rav. So we do this also. So we close the record also. No, not the deepest, darkest secret of the world. Anyway, okay. So both sides, the bottom line is that the cross is fairly complex. And therefore, one should try to make sure that the most important thing is, as a Rav, if you're going to make this, make sure you find somebody who knows what they're doing. And someone who knows they're doing physically, that's just halachic. Someone who knows they're a bottom or mamish, like, I think that's what they do all day. So I would never ever trust myself to build a mikvah. You bring in the guys who are real mumchim from the Dava, the guys who really know that it's almost cold. There are a bunch of them floating around the world, and they go and they'll run all over the place to try to help you. And that's really, that's the bottom line. But as Rabbanim, still, you have to know the ABCs of mikvahs, because even if you find yourself in some community somewhere, and even though you may have built the most beautiful mikvah, things something's going wrong, you have to be the first responders. You have to know. Wait a second. Did his chila just develop out of nowhere? Is my hole being covered up at the right time, at the wrong time? Is the woman being, people filling up the mikvah careful? The alley filling up the mikvah? So there's a very, very important thing. The community rabbi who's in charge of the mikvah has a lot of things to be adopted of, but the etzem construction should obviously be done with somebody who's a very, very well-run professional in this area. And then you have to feel free to be able to, connect with them, talk to them, and any of these kinds of things.
Okay. We'll dive downstairs. We're going down here. We'll dive in here.
Give me one second.